First of all, I have to say this group is really incredible. I have met some of you in person, of course, but a lot of you I haven't, and I feel really fortunate to be a part of this group and getting to know, albeit in this very strange way, to know some of you, like just by your background and your faces in the square. I know not everybody can turn their cameras on for various reasons, but those of you that can, I really appreciate it. And I feel honored to be welcomed into your home. And then this group is amazing too, with the Donna. Just in general, I've been teaching this group sporadically. I've been with you all sporadically for the past year, here and there, when you need someone to come in. And it warms my heart, the Donna and the Teacher Fund. It's really amazing, and it's quite a profound thing. Actually, that circle of reciprocity and generosity that shows up with this group is really beautiful. And then that you all run the group, I love so many aspects of this group. It's really lovely. I feel quite fortunate to be a part of it. Also, okay, so just to welcome, I know Patty said this, but welcome all of you. Whatever state you're in tonight, whatever mood you're in tonight, whatever, however your body's doing, like to specifically welcome you into our practice together and into the teachings. Whatever gender you are, whatever race you are, whatever age you are, whatever capacity you are welcome here tonight. Specifically, you know, we come together in these ways online with our Sangha to create a community of non-harming, and hopefully that will be carried through and that you can feel that somehow through this technology, this community of non-harming. So as Patty mentioned, I teach yoga. I've been teaching yoga for a little longer than I've been teaching Dharma. And I, many, many years ago, at this point, I don't know, at least a decade ago, maybe, I don't know, like it all blurs together. It's like I don't remember what year Patty and I were in dedicated practitioners together. It's all a big blur. But at any rate, many years ago, I went to a yoga workshop, and it was not just a yoga workshop for downward dog, for the poses, for the postures, but it was a yoga workshop that included the spiritual teachings, because yoga is a lineage of its own that has its own spiritual teachings and other practices like meditation and breathing exercises. So I went to this workshop, and it was a teacher, it was a man teacher. And he stood up at the front of the room at the beginning of the workshop and said, "Yoga is about the cultivation of power." And it kind of blew my mind. Like, what? This is a spiritual practice, a cultivation of power? I don't know. It blew my mind. And I've been chewing on that maybe ever since, off and on. And then maybe about 5 years ago, I went to one of the New Year's retreats with the nuns, Aya Ananda Bodhi and Aya Santa Chitta. And I, like, for this New Year's retreat, they had us do, some of you might have been on their New Year's retreats, they had us do a fire ritual where we set intentions. And I, for that year, set the intention of, faith or confidence or trust. And that intention has carried me through. Actually, I thought it was just going to be a 1 year exploration of that topic, and it turns out it's continuing to unfold and unfold and unfold. This sense of trust, of confidence, of this bringing my heart to my practice, bringing my heart to my practice in this sense of capacity that I could even do it. So that's been an exploration. I decided about a month ago to teach a workshop on power. It's like, okay, I'm going to teach a workshop on power. This teacher said to me more than a decade ago, yoga is the cultivation of power. And I'm very interested in, clearly in the Buddha Dharma. It's my deep heart path. And how does power figure into this? I feel like power in spiritual circles is a little taboo. Like it's a little taboo to talk about. you know, there's a list, which I will weave in and talk about later in the second half of the talk, in particular, a list called the five faculties or the five powers. And we could think of, like, to frame a talk around power, our spiritual power, we could think of it as that through our spiritual practice, through the practices of mindfulness, wisdom, compassion, through these practices, that through the Buddha's Eightfold Path, through all of the things that we do, through our meditation practice that we just came through, we are in some ways learning to be less and less reactive and more present, less and less hooked. As Pema Chodron would call it, the shempa, the hook. When we get hooked, we lose our power, we lose our choice. And through our practice of mindfulness, we have more and more choice and more power. And I think that's really interesting. So what do I mean when I say power? I looked it up in the dictionary. Power is the ability to do something or act in a particular way, which is really right. The capacity to be present, the capacity to practice mindfulness is an ability to do something. And then also power, the second definition is the capacity or ability to direct or influence the behavior of others or the course of events. And we do this all the time. We influence each other and we are influenced by each other. So the process of a spiritual practice is the cultivation in some ways of inner freedom, inner choice, and therefore power, our capacity to act in a certain way. So life itself, actually your life, my life, everybody's life, cannot be lived nor separated from power. So we wake up in the morning, it takes some sense of power and capacity to get out of bed. Some days it takes a lot more effort to get out of bed, a lot more energy to get out of bed. So this sense of life cannot be lived nor separated from power. And power is really just the ability to do something. And then every day, all of us are moving through systems of power, whether at work, in the broader culture, in our institutions, our government institutions, and even in our home life, in our family life, we're moving through systems of power. So power in itself isn't inherently good or bad. It's not inherently wholesome or unwholesome, to use a more Buddhist term. It's a neutral force that can be used in a way that's skillful or in ways that are unskillful. So like when we decide to sit down and meditate, that's using our power in a skillful way to sit down and actually come to our practice, right? There's so many other things that you could be doing on a Sunday night, eating dinner. I mean, so many other things that could be happening, but you came to practice and we sat down together. That is a form of power, of choice that you were doing to come to your practice. So power is like water. It flows like a current. It flows like a current through everyday life. Really, we could think of power as energy. And I'm in particular very interested in talking about spiritual power, but I feel like it's maybe a little bit of a false decision, delineation to pull spiritual power apart from everyday power, because spiritual power is everyday power. I mean, how many times have you heard a teacher talk about why speech, for example? Isn't that an amazing power, to be able to speak with skill to cause less harm for yourself and others? So in this workshop that I taught, I had us write on some papers on the wall lists of how many different kinds of power, or things that are powerful. So like the weather is very powerful. The storms that keep happening in Florida and the weather can actually influence or impact us in our day to day. I don't know if you ever got a migraine from the pressure, right? The barometer, however you say it, right? Like that sense of pressure. So the nature is very powerful. The weather is powerful. The elements, fire. We can see in California how powerful fire is, or water, like the sense of the tides. I was at the beach the other day and the ocean had pulled up this massive redwood tree that had fallen at some point. It didn't have bark on it anymore, but this massive must have weighed hundreds or maybe ton, quite literally a ton. And the ocean, the power of the tide pulled that up. When I was looking, when I was thinking about teaching on power, I was, of course, consulting Dharma Seed, our compendium of our beloved teacher's talks. And I got so many things: the power of compassion, the power of loving kindness, the power of mindfulness, the five powers, which I'll talk about. So our spiritual practice and these qualities are very, very powerful. I know you know the power of incidental offhand kindness. Maybe you are having a really rough day at one point and somebody was just incidentally kind to you and it just touched your heart. That sense of how powerful friendliness and care can be. The power of wisdom. We can see this in our own lives as we move through, and develop our wisdom with our practice, how powerful that can be. And then we have the power of the five faculties, which I'm going to continue to talk about. The five faculties of faith is the first one, or trust or confidence. And I'll talk more about that word faith in a little bit because it's a little confusing or hard for some people. And then energy, which I love this translation, the power of diligence. Ah, so powerful. Diligence, steady effort. Mindfulness. The power of samadhi or focus, the power of wisdom. And then we can see in our lives actually the power of unwholesome craving. We can see the damage actually in the world around us from the power of craving and the delusion about what the earth can take and how much our craving impacts, not just our own individual lives, but our collective. The power of the mind. Our minds are very, very powerful. The power of emotions, the power of social media and advertising, the power of wealth and privilege, the power of social norms, the power of money, the power of the government, the power of surrender. And then when I was with this group of people, we were actually luckily enough, fortunate enough, got to practice together in person. And we just started naming all the things that were powerful. And maybe things are coming into your mind. And it turns out that there's everything. To be alive is to be touched by power. And to be a human being is to be influenced and to influence. And that there's power woven, not separate from us in our lives. True power or spiritual power is flexible rather than rigid. That sense of being able to bend with the wind, to bend with the wind. So I was looking for a talk in particular on not the power of, like the power of mindfulness or the power of loving kindness, because actually my faith, my trust is quite strong and I know those qualities for myself. And maybe you do too, that those qualities are very powerful. I was interested in a Dharma talk. I mean, I could go and find whatever secular talk or non-spiritual talk on power, but I was interested in a Dharma talk on power. And I found one through the Zen lineage. And there's a teacher named Mark Lesser. I don't know if any of you know him, but he has a couple of talks on power. And so I was listening to one and he was giving a talk at Green Gulch. Have you been to Green Gulch? It's this really beautiful place in Marin. It's really, really amazing. It's a farm and a Zen center. And on Sunday mornings, they have community Dharma talks I don't know if that's still happening since the pandemic, but at any rate, they used to, maybe they still do, have Sunday morning talks. And this teacher, and the children were in the room, and this teacher was telling stories to the children at the beginning of the Dharma talk. And I thought it was really interesting. These children's stories, so powerful. He was talking to the kids and he was telling a story about a little girl who longed in her life to do something beautiful, to make the world a more beautiful place. Oh, this is something that's actually quite powerful. Our hearts' wholesome longings, the heart's longing for freedom. This is a wholesome desire, and that can be very, very powerful. Or the power of imagination or inspiration. But at any rate, so this little girl, she wanted to make the world a more beautiful place. And he told this very long, convoluted story about this little girl, which I'm not going to do. But she grew up and she traveled all over the world. And then finally, at some point as an adult, she realized that she could make the world a more beautiful place by planting flower seeds wherever she went. So lupin, that's what he said. Did you know the lupin? It's a really beautiful purple wildflower. And that she just for the rest of her life would plant lupin seeds wherever she went. And it's like a little trail of flowers behind her. And in this way, she used the power of her heart to make the world a more beautiful place, to make the world a more beautiful place. And so sometimes if I'm talking about power, we might think, oh, like systems of power and oppression, or when it could be something very simple, something very, very simple as planting, like the heart's longing to make the world a more beautiful place and planting flower seeds wherever you go. So then the children at the end of this little story time, we're going to go outside and harvest some potatoes because Green Gulch is a farm. So the children, the teacher, Mark Lester, was telling the children, well, you're about to go harvest the potatoes. And this is actually a really powerful thing to do too. It's also very simple and ordinary, harvesting potatoes, but you harvest a potato and somebody's going to cook it and then somebody's going to eat it. And when they eat that potato that the child harvested, when they eat that potato, then that energy will allow the person to practice. And so this to me points to how there are so many simple powers like harvesting a potato, like eating a potato so that you can practice, and how the world is completely interrelated, interdependent, and arising together. And so, of course, we have power because we are all deeply related. You can go into the garden and harvest potatoes and make a beautiful meal for a loved one, and that allows them to be alive for another day. What an amazing, powerful thing to do. So when we're talking about power, I'm not just talking about big things, I'm talking about little things. Okay, so the five powers or the five faculties. I was talking to a friend, and I'm going to name them again and then I'll tell you about my friend. So the five of them are, the first one is Sada, is the Pali word. So the teachings of the Buddha were in Pali. And the word is Saddha. Saddha, or in Sanskrit, Shraddha. And this is faith or trust, or I'm going to even call it right now, inspiration or imagination. This believing that you could practice, that there's some benefit in the practice for you. So this sense of trust or confidence that there's something here in the Buddhist teaching that can really help you. And then the next one is Virya, Viriya, Virya, which is the same, I think, in the Pali and the Sanskrit, Virya, which is energy, sometimes also translated as diligence or effort. little bit by little bit. And then mindfulness, sati, S-A-T-I. I don't know what the Sanskrit is for that, but that's the Pali, S-A-T-I. Sati means to remember. And mindfulness, this quality of remembering what's dear to your heart, remembering what you're doing while you're doing it, this quality of mindfulness as a power. And then the fourth one is samadhi, which is a focus. Samadhi, and it's the same in Sanskrit and Pali, this one, samadhi, S-A-M-A-D-H-I, our focus, absorption. And then the last one, panya, P-A-N-N-A, P-A-N-N-A, or prajna in Sanskrit, P-R-A-J-N-A, wisdom. That sense of, you know, the meditation that we're practicing is called insight meditation. It's the wisdom coming through as it touches you. So we have these five qualities. So I was talking to a friend about these five, and she's right now putting together a podcast, and it's a podcast to actually to help people. That's her thing, to sort of inspire people. And I told her these five, and she's like, "Whoa, these five! You need these five to have success at anything you do." This is the thing. Like, we can talk about these five in the context of a meditation retreat and how you practice meditation. We can talk about these five in how you create a podcast. We could talk about these five in particular in your spiritual practice, the development of your spiritual practice, the development of power. So these five are said to be capacities that we all have. Capacities that we all have that when developed become power. I was listening to a talk by Ajahn Suchito, who's a Western monastic. He's been a monastic for many years. And the word, he was saying that the word that we translate as faculty or power is indriya. Indriya, which is a capacity. And he said the indriya is a leading faculty, right? It leads you. So he said other things that can lead you that are considered to be indriya. So these five are considered to be indriya, and they lead us forward, that sense of onward leading into our practice. But he also said in this talk that pleasure and pain can be leading us, right? We get dragged around sometimes into reactivity, liking this thing, not liking this thing, running away from pain, running towards pleasure, and that sense of being so reactive. And when we do that, we're losing our choice, our capacity, and instead we're hooked in and being led around by pleasure and pain or the senses. So Ajahn Suchito said also the senses, the sense faculties, the eyes, the nose, the tongue, the ears, the minds, that the senses lead us around too, that they're also called indriya. So this sense of these five that can lead us through in our life through the development, for the development of our spiritual practice, for the development of wisdom and compassion as a power, that we can follow them. So he was also saying, which I thought was really kind of blew my mind, that this first one, faith or confidence or trust or inspiration, it's the leader of the pack, and that is the most important. It's the most important because without any sense of trust or confidence, we will stop practicing. If we think we can't do it, if we succumb to, oh, I can't do it, am I doing it right? Is it even important? Why am I doing it? When we succumb to that kind of doubt, I don't know if you're familiar with that. I'm familiar with that. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's sort of like 3 a.m. wake up, what am I doing kind of thing. When we succumb to that, we don't even practice. So I'm not talking about doubt in the sense of the Zen tradition, like the great doubt, which is considered to be onward leading. The kind of doubt I'm talking about is the kind that that we lose all sense of trust or confidence that we could do, that we could change, that we can shift, that we can grow, that we have the possibility of waking up. So this first one, this faith, this sadha. So it's not faith. It's not really faith in the sense of a Christian faith. I don't know if you grew up with that. Probably not all of you did at all. Maybe not even very many of you. But that sense of faith in a God or faith in something outside. But it's actually our own, like our own sense of trust, our own sense of confidence. It's like a felt sense inside of us. Does that make sense? Whenever I talk about it, I actually start to often sit up more. Like I feel it in my spine, and I wonder how you feel it, right? Like the sense of being able to step forth into life, to be able to enter into engagements, right? That sense of trust and confidence. And it's said that this, as we start in our spiritual practice, as we begin, there's some small spark of it, some like a bit of bright faith, like, oh, yeah, I think these teachings have something for me. I'm going to try a meditation retreat, or I'm going to read a book, and I'm going to try some meditation on my own, or I'm going to come to Marin Sangha on a Sunday night. I think there's something. And then we practice. So we get inspired, we have the imagination, we have the inspiration, we have the confidence, we have the trust, and that gives rise to a sense of energy. Oh, I can do this. I'm going to do it. I have the energy to try it. I'm going to put my energy here. And that when we begin to do the practice and move through these five steps, to talk about them in a sequential way, when we do that, our faith becomes verified. We start to see the changes that happen. And that it becomes, instead of something outside of us, but becomes integrated in, it becomes known by the body and the heart. It becomes known by our system through practice. I wonder if that's happened for you. I wish that, maybe later I'll ask that question if I can remember it. Like, what is your experience of that? How's that happened for you? That sense of doing practice and seeing the difference it makes. Or maybe, you know, like sometimes, like me, if I'm having a bad day or something's happening, I put on a Dharma talk and it can totally, right? Like the refuge of the Dharma can totally shift me. And that's happened so many times that I have complete confidence in that. I have trust in that. That capacity. Or maybe for you, through the practice of mindfulness, of being able to, through your practice over time, you begin to have confidence that you can meet whatever moment is here in front of you, that the mind will tell a story about why you can't meet something or why it's going to be horrible and the worst thing in the world is going to happen. Right. But when it comes down to it, you've seen it enough times that you can meet each moment. It's maybe not a preferred moment. It's maybe not a pleasant moment. But when it comes down to it, with mindfulness, with that sense of mindfulness, that you can, and you've learned that over time that you can. And that gives rise to more diligence, more effort, more energy, because we are inspiration. Grows and grows into an unshakable confidence. An unshakable confidence. That sounds so nice. I want that, a little unshakable confidence. If we could have a little condiment of that. Anyway, so diligence or energy, it's called. I like to think of this one. Sometimes I feel like we can get a little confused and we think, I'm going to climb the mountain and I'm going to do it on my own. When really this quality of energy, it might look like that sometimes, but more often than not, it's a kind of steady effort over time that's maintainable, right? We're in this not we're not in this for the sprint. We're in this for the marathon. This kind of just being willing, the commitment to show up again and again, the steady effort over time. Whereas through this steady effort over time, that there arises a kind of confidence and integrity in the effort itself. So that we're not so hooked onto the results, but the integrity of the effort itself. Okay, I'm going to practice ethical behavior, not because I get a gold star or I get to go to heaven or a good grade, but actually because the practice, and I'm saying practice, not a perfect, the practice of behaving ethically is a reward into itself. That sense of integrity in the effort itself, that diligent effort over time. We can think about the Grand Canyon. Is this amazing, oh, I know Patty just went to it, right? The Grand Canyon is this amazing thing that was made not in 1 year, not in 2 years, but with the power of water over time. And so over time, with this kind of steady effort, where we remember our inspiration, we remember our confidence and trust in the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And we make that effort over time, and then eventually we'll get the Grand Canyon in this metaphor. You might not actually get a Grand Canyon, but in the metaphor, right? Like that sense. And then the third capacity that we all have that through development becomes a power is the power of mindfulness. So just the power of doing what we're doing while we're doing it, right? Like that sense of knowing what's happening while it's happening, that sense of presence, the sense, the power of non-judgmental attention, where we're present. And that when we are seeing clearly, when we are seeing clearly, we have more choice, we have more agency. It's quite a beautiful thing, I think, that sense of mindfulness. So mindfulness, the word itself is translated as to remember. And when I first heard this, it didn't resonate with me so much. Which I actually think is really interesting how our practices change over time and our understanding changes over time and the whole thing unfolds. It's not like these teachings are pointing us to some fixed state in the future that we'll get to. It's actually this changing, alive thing that we're engaging with. So maybe for you, when I say the word sati means to remember, maybe it doesn't resonate, or maybe it does with you, because we'll all have different understandings of the teachings. And may it be so, and may there be many Dharma teachers so that we can learn from each other, learn from many different kinds of Dharma teachers. But at any rate, this translation of the word is to remember. Which recently in my meditation practice, it's just remembering that I'm meditating, which maybe sounds really obvious, but I don't know, like things arise in the meditation practice. The next thing you know, I'm like planning the day. Does that happen to you? And I've forgotten that I'm meditating, or right, just remembering what I'm doing, like just to remember, like, oh, I'm just sitting here. I'm going to remember that I'm sitting here. Or maybe we could even broaden it outside of meditation and think of mindfulness as the capacity to remember what's important. This is so helpful, for example, if you're working with wise speech. It's very easy to get swept away, and our speech suddenly is not so helpful anymore, and is harmful, causing harm to somebody else or to ourselves. And so we just remember Maybe I've been thinking about this week inner speech. Like, what is inner wise speech, and how do I and how do you, how do we all collectively speak to ourselves, and what impact is that? But in order to work with speech, whether it's inner speech or outer speech, we have to remember that that's what we want to work with. So that just a simple kind of remembering, to remember what is important, to remember what lifts the heart up, to remember what is wholesome. Okay, and then the fourth one is samadhi, is focus or absorption. This is when Ajahn Suchito in his talk talked about this one as when the mind is held. When the mind is held. That sounds very different than like, oh, I've got to concentrate my mind. I've got to force my mind into concentration. But really, this sense of absorption. Did you ever sit down to read a book and have hours pass? Just like that, and you didn't even know? Or maybe you play music and you sat down and then just you became absorbed, you became focused, and that sense of how it sweeps you away, that sense of small self, but that sense of absorption or concentration. I like to talk about this one is in a gardening metaphor. Because sometimes when we're meditating in particular, we might think, oh, I need to focus the mind. I need to work on my concentration. But in my garden, if I would like to grow a tomato, it's always the fruit I give the example of. But if I want to grow a tomato, I can't force the tomato, but I can create the conditions, the soil, the water, the light, the air. Right. And then with time, the tomato will arise and with the correct conditions or appropriate conditions. So, in this way, if we create the conditions for the mind to settle, the mind will settle. So, a sense of the mind being held in the present moment, and that this is done through absorption, through letting go. And really, this quality of focus is so important to develop. We all have it. We all have it to differing degrees. There's definitely differences in us and how we show up with our focus, but it can be developed. And it can be like with my phone nowadays, if I start to cook something and then I think, oh, I'm just going to check my phone. Does this happen to any of you? I'm telling all sorts of stories on myself tonight where you like start to do something and then pick up the phone. And then next thing you know, the dinner is burned, right? Like I'm training, like we can with our phones, with our devices, train in a lack of focus and how helpful it is and important it is to develop this capacity, the focus where the mind is held in absorption. All right. And then the last one as a power is wisdom, is this quality of insight or wisdom. This is where we see that power. I'm going to bring it back to the beginning of the talk, that sense of power that it doesn't belong to you. It's not yours. Even the spiritual power is not yours in the sense of it doesn't belong to anyone. We can know it and we can feel it, but it doesn't belong to you. And that insight that through our practice, we can start to see, we can see the impermanent nature of everything, and not in an intellectual way, but we can actually start to understand, oh yeah, things are changing. Like when I was 30, I couldn't imagine being 50. It was just beyond me. It seemed like I would be young forever. And now that I'm in my 50s, I can very much imagine being in my 70s because now I understand impermanence a lot more. I don't have this misunderstanding that I will be 30 forever. I can see, and I'm not going to be in my 50s forever either. I can see impermanence. It's something that I know, not just intellectually, I can actually feel it, right? Like that is the kind of wisdom. Then when we start to see and understand and actually live that things are impermanent, and that who we are is deeply related and connected to everything else. So I have this little quote that I want to read you. Let's see. Okay. So this is from James Barras. He was talking about this quality of wisdom, and he was saying, in this, we can see that you, this is a teaching on not self, you are life expressing itself as a changing flow. So you are not a noun, you are a verb. And this is wisdom when we start to see it. You and I, all of us together, are life expressing itself as a changing flow. That we are connected to everything else. That power can flow through us. And sometimes we feel small and sometimes we feel big, right? That this is life. It's impermanent, but it's changing. So with our spiritual practice and with these five powers or five capacities, we can begin to study ourselves and we can begin to know ourselves so deeply, and we can know that we are life living itself through us, that things are impermanent, and that we are all subject to illness and death, and that the wise response to that is the cultivation of compassion, of a warm-heartedness, so that with our spiritual practice, we can know ourselves deeply, and that we can look for and find ways to make the world a more beautiful place, a more beautiful place for each other. All right, loves. That's what I have for you tonight. Thank you.